I call today's program Facing Racial Realities, and it begins with a message. This message I am about to read is a warning to America. It was written by a man who not only is not white, but who actively supports and encourages the dispossession of white people. A man who, when asked about miscegenation, says he is, quote, all for it, unquote. Nevertheless, he is a rare man in America these days. He is a man who states frankly what others are afraid to speak of or even think about. As such, we are lucky to hear from him. His truths are a warning to all white Americans. The author has asked me to slightly rewrite his article so that internet search engines will have a harder time locating it, and he has asked me not to broadcast his real name over this program because he fears the possible reprisals that often follow truth-telling on racial matters. So I will refer to him by his pen name of Henry Liu. Listen to his warning to the West. We're doing a pretty good job of infiltrating America and forcing whites to accept us. Asians ought to continue to have many more babies. We already are more than half the Earth's population, and it won't be long before the 12% white minority will become Asian African, since we've convinced them that intermarriage is good and normal. Over such a planet, we Asians can unfurl our racial flag. The Republican Party enjoyed a brief height of glory in 1994 and 1995 when conservative backlash outvoted the liberal welfare immigrant voting bloc. However, their reign is already starting to crumble. What if Clinton wins the 1996 election? What if the religious right loses all credibility by insisting upon anti-abortion and biblical education policies? What if the media continue to allege ties between white supremacists and Republicans? And by the year 2000, the combined voting power of white liberals, blacks, and other minorities makes Congress overwhelmingly Democrat. This starts a chain reaction in which Congress votes to increase the immigration quota, and the more that non-white immigrants become voters, the more they succeed in increasing the immigration quota even further and making the schools teach children that Americans should be tolerant and accept infinite immigration. By 2030, immigrants, their white spouses, and other minorities make up 70% of the U.S. population. By popular demand, federal law enforcement agencies go after any and all white people who resist us and put them away in concentration camps. By 2050, whites become 15% of the U.S. population. The UN replaces the federal government of America, and other Western nations are forced under UN monitoring to accept millions of African, Asian, and Middle Eastern citizens. The planet then becomes a game between Africans and Asians only. Guess who will win that game? White Americans have an average of 1.8 children per couple, and that number is declining. The number of couples also is declining as homosexuality and childlessness become ever more fashionable among whites. At the same time, I predict 10% of Caucasians will marry non-whites, while non-white immigrants continue to both come in increasing numbers and have more children per couple. At the present rate, pure Europeans in America will become a rare species within decades. Given our ever-increasing standards of political correctness, it does not seem likely that the white separatists will be able to outlaw interracial marriages in time to make a difference. It also seems unlikely that a vogue for having many children will ever return for whites. The media would oppose it as racist. Adoption of non-white babies is also skyrocketing. It's only a matter of time before USA stands for United States of Asia. Since China's one-child policy is falling apart, and since white people are so eager to adopt babies, we could have a profitable trade of exporting Chinese babies to Western countries. Let's continue to show them images of tortured orphans so that white couples will continue to adopt Chinese babies like there was no tomorrow. I have been asked by other Asians, are you suggesting that we start baby farms and harvest the babies as trading commodities? Well, we've always been good at trade, haven't we? If the environmentalists complain, we can just accuse them of racism. In place of China's one-child policy, we could have the export the rest policy. Every now and then, slaughter a kid and show it off to the Western media so that their churches will bend over backwards to adopt more kids. We may never be able to defeat the West militarily, but we sure as hell can defeat them genetically. Today, European man is losing out in numbers and economic prowess to Mongoloid man. Whereas Mongoloids far outnumber Europeans in population, whites have enthusiastically brought in Mongoloid immigrants for assimilation and intermarriage. The one-way traffic of immigration occurs on top of lower birth and fertility rates for whites. It appears that one day soon, Asians can prepare to unfurl their racial flag over a vanquished planet. My critics say, but when an Asian and a Caucasian join together, the kid is half Asian and half Caucasian. It's not that either the Caucasians won or the Asian won in the match, is it? Well, my critics are wrong. As the lineage becomes three-quarter Asian, seven-eighths Asian, 15/16 Asian, there comes a point when the person is Asian for all practical purposes. Asian nations need merely to export a tiny percentage of their burgeoning populations in order to make, as I said, USA stand for United States of Asia. Imagine a 22nd century when California becomes New Khalistan, Kansas becomes New Canton, Wyoming becomes New Wuhan, Louisiana becomes New Lhasa, North Dakota becomes New Dhaka, Indiana becomes New India, Pennsylvania becomes New Busan, and Washington, D.C. becomes New Haiphong. Southern parts of the U.S. might be given to Latin American nations so that Texas becomes Nuevo Sonora and Florida becomes Nuevo Cuba. We could have Aryan reservations in the foothills of the Appalachians, and their exotic Christian religion would be showcased in museums. There are already more Muslims than Episcopalians in America, so perhaps that might become the new state religion. Buddhists and Hindus would follow close behind. Overpopulation is often cited as a major problem in China and other Asian countries. Yes, it is a problem, and yes, the birth rate there has been slightly reduced, but there is another solution which Asians are quietly implementing. Asian countries are exporting their excess populations to America, making more space at home, while America becomes ever more Asian. Naturally, we are happy that Americans are not being informed of this in their media. As Sun Tzu would say, sow confusion among your enemy and weaken him. American school children are already learning about the Aboriginal First Nations, the Mongoloids who rightfully own this continent. And they are now learning about the crimes of the European invaders and usurpers. And soon, all American school children will learn of the ultimate destiny and purpose behind it all, the new United States of Asia. For those of us with Asian mothers, let us take this day to thank them for bringing us to bear. Let us pray that our holy genes will continue to spread across the planet until the day that the yellow sun will shine upon the earth and the yellow moon will guide us through the darkness. You have been listening to the thoughts of Henry Liu. I am glad that Henry Liu has given us this warning, and I am glad that a few people in this country are still unafraid, to exercise their freedom of speech and seek the truth.
This is American Dissident Voices. Why don't you write today to the fine radio station that carries this program and let them know that you appreciate their belief in freedom of speech. Remember, the enemies of freedom never rest. Don't let their voices be the only ones this station hears.
The word racism has been made into a synonym for evil. But racism only means having racial feelings, a feeling of kinship with your racial brothers and sisters, a feeling of understanding and belonging, a feeling of being part of a culture, a part of something bigger than ourselves. Racial feelings are inborn in us. They are natural and good. And it is one of this century's most horrible deceptions to paint them as somehow wrong. If you want to call our normal racial feelings racism, then so be it. We'll call them racism. As long as there are races, there will be racism. It is inborn, has an evolutionary purpose and survival value, and is even present in non-human species. Racial feelings are about as likely to disappear as are sexual feelings. Actually, racism is good and necessary for the continued branching off of new types of human beings from the existing stocks. Evolution, so far as we know, operates primarily by such branching, and racial feelings are an important part of what keeps the branches apart. At some point, Homo sapiens sapiens refused to breed with the submen around him. Mallards and wood ducks can interbreed, and may even do so under certain freak conditions. But the mentality of these birds, even when they live in the same territory, makes them shun the other type. The branches, once one, are now separate for all time. Most whites, even most liberal whites, instinctively choose whites as neighbors, schoolmates, and life mates. This is good and natural, and really has nothing at all to do with the emotion of hate. Evolution, branching, and separation have brought about all the wonderful diversity of creation that we see around us. It is nature's way. It is God's way. And virtually all of natural history is testament to the natural preference of species, subspecies, and races to cleave to their own kind. It is only by acknowledging the wisdom of our racial feelings that the wonderful qualities of our race can be preserved. Our society once protected, admittedly in an imperfect way, but protected the gene pool that produced Da Vinci, Aristotle, Mozart, Beethoven, and the builders of the Saturn V rocket. It doesn't protect that gene pool anymore. The multiculturalists and multiracialists are in the ascendant in the West and promulgate a moral paradigm in which defense of our gene pool is evil, racist. This, in my view, is destructive and genocidal. White Americans and whites around the world are in increasing numbers beginning to see themselves again as a people with a common history and common interests and values. Whites instinctively feel a kinship that they do not feel with Arabs, Africans, Asians, or Australoids. They inwardly respond to Beethoven as they cannot respond to the call from the minaret or the beat of African drums. They are inspired by the Gothic spires of Germany and Spain, and the Parthenon, the Pantheon, and the Arch of Titus. But the Wailing Wall, the altars of the Incas, and the cryptic tribal art on the walls of the New York subway system, fascinating though they may be, remain alien. The fact that other races see us as one people, and at times attack us as one people, aids this process of rising racial consciousness. A similar situation prevails among blacks. A people is awakening and taking steps to take charge of its own destiny. Such is the way that peoples and nations are formed. Such is the way of nature. And the screams from the ivory towers of the academic elite will not stop this process. One of the latest hysterical screams from the academic left is the claim that the white race simply does not exist, that there is no such thing and never has been. A large number of degreed whores of academe say so, but then they also think that Bill Moyers can be taken seriously. There is a political agenda behind the "there is no such thing as the white race" malarkey, and it exposes itself every time the obvious corollary is stated. If there is no such thing as the white race, then there is no collective responsibility for the real and imagined sins it committed against the equally imaginary African, Amerindian, etc. races, which stand impatiently in the handout lines. So, no such thing as the white race, no such thing as any race, no more affirmative action, races do not exist, no more Holocaust reparations, races do not exist, no more diversity requirements or training, races do not exist. Oh, that would never do. It is only the white race which does not and cannot exist. It cannot exist. Because if its existence were admitted, then the genocide which is now being practiced against it would become so obvious. And even a few honest liberals might pale at that and spoil the whole show. The multiracialists have painted themselves into a corner. What to do? Probably just mumble that the oppressed groups are peoples, nations, or something of the sort, and they will hope that whites never awake from their stupor and coalesce into a people just as conscious of its interests and destiny as, say, are the Jews. What a different world that would be. Perhaps one day, liberal true believers will wake up and discover that nothing exists. That is the end of the road for their mode of thinking. The verb to be is anathema to them. The thought that there might be an absolute reality outside themselves, a reality which is what it is, regardless of their wishes, theories, hopes, daydreams, or decrees, is as intolerable to them as it is to a two-year-old. Believe it or not, they have even developed a language called E-prime, a version of English which eschews completely the verb to be. But I ramble. Liberals are very suggestible, and are really the victims of, not the originators of, the race does not exist, but some races must be favored, swindle. It is convenient to demonize and dehumanize people that you are going to commit genocide upon. And it is easier to commit genocide when you convince your henchmen that the victims really don't exist. That is what the white race does not exist con is really all about. It is a warrant for genocide. Another lie of the academic elite, which they ram down the throats of our children on a daily basis, is that their technique of genocide, racial mixing, is really good for us because it brings so-called hybrid vigor. Hybrid vigor is a term that refers to exceptional growth, which sometimes manifests itself when scientists cross or hybridize strains of plants or animals experimentally. Hybrid vigor signifies nothing in terms of the human genius needed to create and sustain a civilization. And where hybrid vigor exists, such as in corn or apple trees, it usually peters out after a few generations. A far more important concept in the crossing of human races is regression to the mean. This means that even if you mate a Negro genius with a white person, the offspring are, on average, likely to exhibit Negroid characteristics more typical of the average Negro, and not necessarily of that particular black genius. And this is even more true of succeeding generations. Regression to the mean, in the case of interbreeding with Africans, means regression to the African mean, with Asians to the Asian mean. Neither holds out promise of raising the level of the upper half of our bell curve. Rather, the opposite. The other races have mixed with Europeans, and everywhere the results are, to say the least, unimpressive. They have nothing to offer us. The European race has all the diversity it needs for health and further evolutionary development. It is a moral and environmental crime of the highest order to destroy it by breaking down all its defenses against interbreeding. The academic whores and shills for genocide are always prating about how we can't say for sure how much of our intelligence and our civilization is genetically determined and how much is caused by the environment. Now, they used to say that it was all environmental, but the evidence is too strongly against them, so they've given up on that score. But I say to them, even you admit that you don't know that our unmatched civilization is not the result of our genetic makeup. If it is, and you obliterate that unique genetic code, do you realize the enormity of what you have done? Whites should be, must be, allowed to re-erect their traditional barriers against mating and constant association with non-whites, to preserve our kind. Anything else is genocide. I can hear the academic genocide justifiers coming out of their holes now and whispering to our young people, there is only one race, the human race. We are all one species. There is a great deal of debate on species boundaries. The question has been raised, should the races be treated as separate species or just subspecies of the same species? They certainly vary enough for subspecies classification. After all, some species of mammals are so little different that a human observer cannot tell them apart. For example, two kinds of Siberian hamsters come to mind, among which a scent discernible only to the hamsters unless instruments are used, is the main difference and the means by which the female chooses a mate of the correct species. To our eyes, they are identical, yet they are separate species. The position that there are no subspecies among men, that they do not even exist, is a very strange one. It would imply that the Australoid, Australian Aborigine, the Capeoid, the Bushman, and the European, white men and women, each developing separately for at least 100,000 years and possessing startling physical differences, are not only the same species, but must be defined as the same subspecies. No one can scientifically defend such a thesis. I cannot speak for anyone else, but in my eyes, the European race, imperfect as it may be, is a race of light and beauty. The race of Shelley and Keats and Poe and Shakespeare, the race of the Parthenon and Chartres Cathedral and Stonehenge, the race of Mozart and Beethoven and Liszt and Brahms, the race of Vermeer and Raphael and Rossetti, the race of Caesar and Alexander and Washington and Jefferson, the race of Ford and Marconi and Goddard and Von Braun and Shockley. This race is threatened. Nowhere is our birth rate above replacement level. Everywhere our borders have been opened, and the new elite teaches our children that intermarriage is good and desirable. Everywhere the new elite teaches our children that to defend their genetic heritage, is the very definition of evil. The end result, if trends continue, will be genocide. The end result will be death for the uniquely beautiful, intelligent, and creative people called by the name of the goddess Europa. Please write to us today. We cannot stay on the air without your help. Your $40 or larger contribution will bring you a year's subscription to our monthly newsletter, Free Speech, which contains facts and ideas that the censors of political correctness are desperate to keep from you. Your subscription also qualifies you for discounts on many of the materials published by National Vanguard Books. Just send $40 or more today to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Our announcers will repeat that address in a moment. That's $40 for a year's subscription to Free Speech. Overseas listeners may pay with international reply coupons or an international postal money order. Until next time, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free.